Soprano Rat alert. Civil defense information will be broadcast at 6:40.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Y2K. How can we prepare?
Stop a few of their machines and radios. Throw them into darkness for a few hours.
We are fighting for our lives. My family must survive.
Boom, for 5 years. 1,000 gallons of gas. Air filtration, water filtration.
Hey guys, Toolman Tim here. Well, this is the presentation of the presentation I did. This is the failing forward, or better yet, failure is not an option. This is the presentation I did at the Spring Self-Reliance Festival workshop. That was April 7th, just yesterday. So I hope you guys really enjoy this. I had a hell of a time putting the whole presentation together, and I hope it affects you like it affected the folks that heard it there live. And I don't think I could have got a better piece of encouragement than when Carrie Brown came up to me in the parking lot as we were leaving and told me that every time he's heard me present, it's gotten better every time. So for what it's worth, thank you, Carrie. I appreciate it. And I hope you guys enjoy hearing this presentation. Take care.
How's everybody doing? Good. Number one, thank you for supporting Dark Horse Lodge. That's absolutely incredible. So, all right, number two, I'm getting just a little bit of feedback there. That's okay. We'll just kind of keep talking until we figure it out. That's a little better, isn't it? All right, we're going to keep going anyway. So the first thing I don't normally do, open it up. I just want to ask a few questions, or one question to a few people. So the original title of this presentation is supposed to be failing is not an option, or failure is not an option. So I want to ask 2 or 3, 4 people, look into the future, the goals you have right now for what you want to do, and tell me what you would do if failure wasn't an option. And don't stand there like you did to John Willis yesterday. Everybody is scared to talk because I don't bite, I promise. So what is a goal that one of you have that you absolutely would make your life better if you couldn't fail at it?
More
right here.
Power.
What is it?
Get electricity on the property.
Right on. What do you need to do to get it done?
Meet the guy next Tuesday and pay the money or figure out another solution.
Perfect. I love it. That's great. I heard something over here. Jeremy.
Buy my land.
Buy your land. What's holding you back?
Nothing anymore. Now I'm going to
look at it. Love it. All right. I want 2 more. Come on. Yep, right here.
Meet more like I'm like.
How's that going so far?
Great.
Anything holding you back?
No, maybe the friends. I got a phone number.
Oh, I love it. Perfect. Excellent. What would you do in your life? What could make your life better if failure was absolutely not an option? So what is it that you're looking at to do right now? For a goal, for a business, for freedom, whatever it happens to be.
Second mic.
What is it?
Your second mic, move it over.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's it.
That might be
me. I apologize. You're not a problem. We'll just put it here. What a good start. There we go. All right. Anyway, so for us, and we didn't even know it at the time, it was the daycares, the property management, the all seasons maintenance handyman business. And the thing was, we kind of failed along the way, but it wasn't failure. We never absolutely stopped. So anybody ever hear of a term apophenia? Nope, that's okay. Neither had I until the other day. It's basically looking for patterns or connections in the everyday world, things that you don't normally shouldn't be connected, you know, like when they see, Mary Magdalene in a piece of toast or a giraffe in a cloud, you know, that kind of stuff, right? All right, so we have a group. Jeremy's one of those people. You got anybody on Telegram? Sure, there we go. Cool, yeah. And all of the community within the workshop, we call them delinquents because we like to live just outside the system a bit. And so every morning we like to post things, or at least the best we can, to kind of motivate people. And I wake up one morning, I look in, and there's this meme in there. And it says, Memento Mori. I thought, man, that sounds kind of positive. I'm like, that sounds really good. So I didn't really want to admit that I didn't know what it meant, but it's Latin for everybody's going to die. It's like, oh, all right. What a great way to open your morning, hey? Or everybody will die. Everybody must die. Okay, we know that's true, but damn, you didn't need to remind me before I had my first coffee in the morning. That was great. I left it. That was it. I went to my local hardware store, my good buddy Rod. He owns the store. Becky knows I either go in for 5 minutes or 5 hours. She doesn't know which one it's going to see. Somebody else knows, right? So that day, I end up going in, and we just get talking. I said, "Did you ever notice?" Well, of course he does. That life is just going really, really fast lately. And he says, "Just wait till you hit 70. It goes even faster." I said, "Fair enough. I'm not going to argue with you." And then he pulls out a tape measure. He says, "You ever see one of these?" "What are you doing here, Rod? You're busting my balls. A tape measure? Of course, I use them all the time." And he goes, "No, hang on. So he pulls the tape measure out, and he says, "Look," and he brought it out to 75 inches. And he goes, "Look, here you are, 75 inches. The average age of lifespan in North America is roughly 76.8. He said, "Let's just call it 75. And you can look at that," and he says, "It's a great illustration." I mean, this dude just owns a hardware store, and he's illustrating to me all about life, right? It's great. And he says, "Look, there it is, 1 inch. Every inch is a year in your life." And I said, "Man, there's some kind of theme here today." People keep reminding me of my own mortality, right? And I thought, lots of people could walk away in a funk from that. You could absolutely spend the whole day thinking, "Man, of course I'm going to die. Of course I'm now 43 and I have, who knows?" You know, you don't ever want to presuppose that you're going to have a lot of time, but you've got, there's your 75 inches. That's what you have, right? You got two ways to look at that. Number one, you look at it as, "Well, I'm just in a funk, I might as well do nothing." Or number two, that's the time you have, and you should be damn well motivated to build a legacy for whatever you want to do. And that could be simple as getting power, that could be building an empire from chaos, if you guys caught my wife's presentation yesterday. Thank you. Or it could be, you know, building a podcast and meeting people who come up to me and say, "You know what, that presentation you did about being a modern Renaissance man a few years ago, that hit me. And I've never let it go since." That kind of stuff absolutely blows me out of the water. All right, anybody remember that film, Apollo 13? All right, I haven't seen it in a long time, but it's a really good film. And in there, they're starting to get nervous. They know, "We don't think we're gonna get these guys back." And they've got the brightest minds in NASA, period. I mean, they pay them, "Is our engineer here? I don't wanna bust his balls again." But no, they pay him engineer dollars, right? I mean, they're top of the line. I made somebody laugh. See, honey, I will record it later that I'm not funny, but right now I'm making her laugh, so that makes me happy. So anyway, Ed O'Neill is a great character actor. He's in there. And of course, it's that 1960s vibe. Everybody's smoking cigarettes. Everybody's sweating. Nobody can come up with a solution. And Ed O'Neill, in his typical bravado, he starts walking out, and he says, "Gentlemen, we've never lost a man in space." And if you don't know, they had guys that they figured there was no way. There's our engineer. Good. Yeah, no. They figured they had guys that were going to die in space. And so he's like, "How else do I motivate them?" He says, "Gentlemen, we've never lost a man in space." He goes, and as he walks out, of course, only as Ed O'Neill can do, and he takes a big smoke of his cigarette, and he says, "Failure is not an option." And that's great. That line never actually happened in real life, but it makes a really good cinematic piece because it's true, right? I talk about cliches all the time. A cliche is still true. It's just an overused truth that starts to lose the meaning in your ear. You kind of get sound deaf to it. You're like, "Oh, that meaning's gone." Doesn't mean it's not true. So simple as that. We need to remember that failure is not an option. That's what we're going to work with. All right. The one and only time that failure becomes an option is when we give up, right? Anybody, am I right? Maybe? Okay, cool. Yeah. The only time failure becomes an absolute end game is if you decide, well, number one, you wake up and you realize that today was memento mori, or number two, you gave up. Simple as that, right? So, what would it be for you guys? Is it a working homestead? Is it completely off-grid? Is it getting your power set up? Is it building a business that lets you, for the most part, go through COVID without needing to deal with a lot of the extra issues that we had to deal with? Anybody remember those? And it was just 4 years ago, and all the memories are coming back on Facebook all the time, and it's like, that was a completely different time. But I want to tell you, building an entrepreneurial presence for us was one of the best things we ever did, because we get to live outside the system, at least in the handyman end of things. So I don't know what it is, but here's the first thing. How do we decide, all right, great, I know what I want. I want power, I want a business, I want land. Where do I start? How do I decide what I need to do every single day? Because that's what we're going to talk about, developing our superpower. Every single day doing something that makes it right. So how do we decide? Anybody? Sorry, it's a rhetorical question. So anyway, there's a great YouTuber I follow. His channel is called Film Booth, and he's one of the guys that gets me going all the time. He's like, he has this way of giving you that kick in the butt, but it doesn't really hurt, but you know you need to do something. And one morning he posts, he said, how do you know what you need to do every single morning for success so that failure is not an option? And the first thing you absolutely do is you ask yourself, Will this help me for my end goal? And if the answer is no, then we don't do it. Okay, perfect. If the answer is, I don't think so, I think it's gonna be kind of bad, then we don't do it. There we go, okay. Somebody liked, anyway. And if it's maybe, it might work, it might not, we don't do it, right? Okay, the only time we decide that we are gonna do something to build the life we wanna live, if it's a resounding hell yes, that thing right there is gonna help me head in the right direction. Does that make sense? All right, so we're gonna talk about embracing the grind. And that's one of those cliches, but it's absolutely true because so many people, AJ over there, I don't know if he's here, are you here right now, AJ? I don't know if he is, but he's probably too busy building the life he wants to live. So he's building that powdered bone broth system over there. And it's really great. I loved sitting and listening to him. He is so excited because it's brand new. And that's great. And I know he's going to succeed because I see it. But a lot of folks that I see that do that, what ends up happening? The grind, right? You guys know when you run a knife along a spinning wheel, you know, to sharpen it, what happens? You get material come off, right? You get heat. It gets uncomfortable. You get skin burns, that kind of stuff, right? So where do we go from there? Because there's gonna be a day, you get those short wins, those easy wins when you first start. That's fun. You know, when we got our first customer hunt with All Seasons Maintenance, that was exciting, right? But then a few months in when, you know, people say some things to you like, aren't you gonna get a real job? Or your daughter's boss comes and asks, why isn't your dad working to support the family? And you're like, that breaks your heart. That's when the grind starts tearing at you. That's when you go in the bathroom and you cry when nobody's looking, and then you say, screw it, I'm going out and I'm gonna keep going. That's the days when you have to decide, am I gonna keep doing it every single day for the grind? Because it gets hard, it absolutely gets hard. And here's the thing, everybody gets really excited. They're like, okay, I can do this. All right, cool, I can start. I'm gonna get up and every day, a couple years ago I did one talking about building a podcast or turning content into currency. And people said, well, how do I start? How do I keep going? Well, one of the things you do is commit to reaching out. If you want to interview guests, reach out to 10 guests every single day. Well, that's exciting for the first 2 or 3 or 4 days, but who here is going to commit to doing that, you know, 5 days a week for 4 years, right? That gets really tough because the first morning you wake up, let's say we want to do walking. When I left SRF last year, I'm still not in great physical shape, but I was in probably the worst physical shape of my life. And I decided I was gonna embrace the grind. 10 years ago when Becky was still out east and I was in Alberta, I was working with a bunch of young fellas and I figured, you know what? I'm gonna impress them. They can work circles around me. I was in my mid 30s and I said, I'm gonna do the coach to 5K. Anybody know what that is? So, and I pronounce it like the Canadian coach, you know, sofa to 5K. So basically it's, you go from sitting around eating Doritos, getting up off the couch and going out and running a 5K. Now you don't do it once. You have to do it over a long period of time. So I got home and I decided I was gonna start doing this. And the first few days I could basically run 30 seconds and then 3 minutes and then 4 minutes. And then I pulled something in my leg and I had to go a couple of days. It was all right, don't worry. And eventually after 12 or 13 weeks, I ran 35 minutes nonstop and hit, well, it was about 37 minutes nonstop and hit my 5K. That was about embracing the grind. It's not easy. Right after I pulled something really nasty in my leg and I'm still working on it, but I embrace the grind every single day and I get there. Do I have a long way to go? Hell yeah, I got a long way to go. But you don't do it overnight, over a week, over a weekend. You have to do something and you have to push it hard. And I listened to, when we left last year, if you guys listened to Becky's presentation, there's something that we both do really good. I do all the driving and she does all the sleeping. And it's great. But while we do that, why are you laughing? I told you I'm not funny, stop laughing. So she does though, but I love it. I love having her next to me and she'll sleep and I decided to listen to Arnold Schwarzenegger's audiobook. And the dude, Arnold, does his own narrating. And I thought, this is not gonna be good. I love the dude, but who wants to listen to Arnold talk for 12 hours? Well, it was one of the best books I ever read. And they asked him one day, they said, Arnold, you're always smiling. What's going on? You're in there lifting, and I know it's tearing muscles and rebuilding. And he said, listen, you need to understand something. Every time it hurts, it means I'm succeeding. He says, if it doesn't hurt, I'm not working hard enough. If you're not tired, you're not building your business hard enough. If you're not going out and walking when you have the flu, You really don't want it. If you're not going to work after having 17 phone calls the day before for the daycare, it really doesn't matter. He said, I smile because it hurts, and it hurts, and I know I'm succeeding. Simple as that. All right, in my hometown, I was a junior, freshman, sophomore, all in the 90s. And 1997, I got my first job other than the paper route that I stopped doing and mom and dad had to do for me, so I don't count that. But so I get a job at the local library. Stop laughing. I said, you can't laugh. It's not fair. Stop. Anyway, so I was the local student assistant there at the library, right when the internet was becoming a thing. And one day, I come in and they have a big banner over the front of the building. What is going on? I'm like, oh, we're going to unveil the name of the famous person that we named the library after. Okay, cool. So they pull it down eventually, and it's some dude named Isaiah W. Wilson. And of course, my 15-year-old brain, I had no idea who the guy was. And almost nobody did at the time. But they brought in a piece of his old house, and they mounted it in the entranceway of the library. And I thought, this is really neat. Who is this dude? And he died 100 years before I was born. Well, anyway, Isaiah W. Wilson, he was a poor dude. He lived in my small town of Digby, Nova Scotia. And his passion was meeting people. I guess I kind of line up with him a little bit. He liked to hear their stories. And you guys know the Farmer's Almanac? Yeah, so he used to walk around and sell the Farmer's Almanac. And he would get to keep a little bit of it. That was his job. And we're not talking like a mile. We're talking multiple miles. So he'd get invited in for dinners. And they would sit and they would chat and they would carry on. And he eventually would start to find out these people had stories. So he started writing them down and he realized he was really passionate about genealogy. So eventually he kind of met everybody in our county. And what they kept asking him was, have you ever been to the archives in Halifax? So you got to understand, it's not really close. And he said, I never have. They go, well, we'll pay you to go up if you want to go up and research. And he thought, you know, this might be a way to get paid and to do what I'm passionate about, which is great. He goes, okay. How much are you going to pay me? And they said, well, how far is it? That's 150 miles. He didn't have a vehicle. He didn't have a horse. He had to walk. They go, we'll pay you a dollar. He did this for a dollar. They would give him a dollar. He would walk 150 miles to the archive, spend a week up there researching for his book, and then he would walk back when he ran out of food and money, and he'd meet people along the way, and he kept doing this for 20 years until he wrote The History and Genealogy of Digby County in my town. And 100 years later, they named that library after him, and his name is still there. And because of that, some people would say that's absolutely asinine to do that. But why? Why would it be? That's his passion. That's the thing that got him out of bed in the morning. That's the thing that got him to sleep on the side of the railroad tracks and not really beg for food, but go and, you know, trade labor for food, simply because he was passionate about figuring out what the genealogy and history of our town was. I mean, if that is not the perfect illustration of embracing the grind, I never had. I've never heard of it. So, you know, what is your 150 mile walk? What are you gonna do just so you can do the thing? I mean, there was no rhyme or reason thinking he was gonna be successful for it. He was doing it because it was his passion. It was the thing he was put on this earth to do. And I guarantee you, he walked those 150 miles each way with a smile on his face. Maybe not the whole time. We all wake up grumpy, right, Carrie? Yep, see this. It's not true. Carrie's never grumpy. He just, I got to pick on you just a little bit. So
you're full of it for that, but thank you.
You're absolutely. So yeah, simple as that. Embracing the grind. What are we? Yeah. And so from there, embracing the grind, and then we're going to go into how do we decide? Because anybody here ever make a New Year's resolution? Yes. Okay. And what usually happens with New Year's resolutions? We do them for a little while, right? We embrace the grind, we swear, all right, here we are. We're absolutely gonna do what we say we're gonna do, and we're gonna do it, right? I worked with a guy at the hardware store. Every year he would quit smoking. Some years it would last till January 3rd, some years somebody's laughing again, and then some years it would last until April. But you always knew that the resolution wasn't going to stick, right? Simple as that. So one of my rules of life that I have found that's worked really, really well for our business is setting goals, not resolutions. Now, here's where it is. This is kind of the first thought that I had when I was putting together this presentation. And the whole idea behind it is that success isn't binary. It's not a one and a zero, right? So it's not, I set a goal. If I don't achieve that goal, I failed, right? So let's talk this way. if you decide you want to lose weight, right? And you only lose 40 pounds, but your goal was 60. Are you going to give up and go back and start eating shit, or are you going to go a little bit longer? Right? We're going to keep going. If you decide you want to start a business and your goal the first year is $100,000 in sales, the first 12 months you do $85,000. Are you going to shut it down and go home? I hope not. I'm still not seeing any head shaking here. That's all right. No. So, again, if you're a smoker and you make it to April 4th and you have a cigarette, are you going to keep smoking or are you going to stop? Right? Right, exactly, because you've already made 4 months of progress. That's the thing that I try to get through people's heads all the time, is that just because you screw up once doesn't mean you got to walk away. You don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Simple as that. So that's one of the things for us that we've always tried to get into our heads, and I push it on my podcast and in the Telegram group all the time, is try not to set resolutions. You know, before the end of the year, when I'm ready to look at where I want to take my YouTube channel and our business from there, we look at it and we say, okay, what are our goals for this year? And that's what's good about goals, because you're shooting toward them. You're not, it's not a one or a zero. It's not a, well, I didn't make it, I guess we'll give up and we'll try again next year, right? Because if that's the case, you know, the first time you go to an all-you-can-eat buffet, you fall down and you wake up with a strawberry shortcake in your mouth, I guess you're going to give up, right? Or the time you go to the bar and you're like, I'm not going to drink, and you sit down and have a glass of water and oops, it's whiskey, you know? Like, there's this girl on TikTok my girls laugh about all the time, and she's funny. She's like, I ordered an apple, but they sent me a bag of chips, right? She knows, yeah, see? Yeah, of course. And there you are. You're not going to give up, right? Stupid things. We all mess up. We all have a day where we wake up and say, I guess I'm not going to send out some podcast invitations this week, right? But the last thing you're going to do is live on that and say, well, that's failure, so I'm not going to do it. Simple as that. All right. So here's something that I've changed over the years. When I did a presentation, and it was all about find baby steps, building the business that you want to have in your life. And that could be whether, again, it's homesteading, whether it's self-reliance, whether it's independence, whether it's just a little business, doesn't matter. I always said the first thing you need to do is you need to start a side hustle, and then you need to start building, and you need to save a little bit of money, and then you need to build a war chest. And then the day will finally come when you're ready to walk away, tell the man, shove this job, I ain't working here anymore. Thank you very much. See, did you hear my echo? It gets a little higher. I have a weird echo like that. And instead, at that point, you're like, okay, finally I'm good. But here's the problem that I realized for a lot of years. Becky and I have never done that. And almost everybody I know, Nicole, John, there's one exception that we know, almost everybody has walked away with no notice, with no safety net. They've burned the bridges, they've burned the boats, and they've had no plan B. And I used to apologize and say, listen, I'm not telling you to walk away and quit. And I'm not. We're all adults here, right? Everybody, I think, almost. You're not, but yeah, close enough. Some of us act like them, some of us don't. But here's the thing. Anybody that I've ever found that's been successful with a business, with something that is their passion, they cut the safety net. Because the problem is, when we have a safety net, we're always thinking about our exit plan, our exit strategy, instead of trying to find a solution to the problem that we're working on. So instead of 100% of the mental focus figuring out how are we going to make payroll this week, we're going to be like, you know what, I can always pull the plug, go bankrupt, and walk away, right? Or when you're working for the man, and I'm not, trust me, I'm not telling you walk away and do it, but what I'm telling you is everybody I've seen this successful, and in our personal lives, no plan B is the only plan. And it's scary as hell, don't get me wrong. It's one of those things that when you walk away, you're like, I don't know how to do it. John's talked about it on his live streams a bunch of times. Once again, how am I going to do this? But you figure out a way. You know, there were times a couple of years ago that we were pretty sure we weren't going to make payroll. But you know what? We made payroll, didn't we, hun? Because we really didn't have a plan B. This was our plan to get there. So you guys have heard this term. This is something I'd use a lot, and I've heard used a ton of times. Sorry, let's show you. Burn the boats or burn the bridges. You know, you get to do one of those cool action scene montages where you light the bridge, soak it in gas, and you flip your lighter over your head like a cool dude and you walk away as the flames go up, right? That's what we get to do. Anybody know where that story came from? Thank you. And I'm going to, now that somebody actually knows, I got to be right on my facts, so I better be careful here. But the gist of the story was Cortez was a Spanish explorer or a privateer or whatever you want to call it. Basically, he had a whole bunch of men and a whole group of ships. And they've been on the water for quite a while. And what happens to men on the water after a while? They start getting pissed off at their leadership. And they're like, we're going to mutiny. We're going to throw Cortez overboard or whatever we're going to do. But Cortez had a plan. They were going to land in Mexico, and they were going to hike 200 miles inland to take whatever city it was. They were going to loot them. They were going to plunder them. They wanted their gold. I don't care what your definition of that goal was, but he wanted success. And he knew that if he left those boats there, there's a good chance he'd end up without a head on his shoulders, and his men would be sailing back. So what did he do? He ordered to scuttle the ships, throw them against the rocks, light them on fire, and burn. And you know why? Because he knew if their only way of leaving and getting back to see their family was to defeat the enemy, was to plunder their gold, and was to steal their ships and ride home as victors, he knew he had no other choice whatsoever. That's what it is. That's what it means. And it doesn't mean, I'm not going to tell you to literally burn bridges, but sometimes that's what it takes. Sometimes your dad, Sean, right, had to walk away from a really comfortable job, didn't he? Is he doing good?
Yeah.
He's doing really good, isn't he? Yes. That's Hack My Homestead. Because he walked away. I'm not saying that he couldn't figure something out if he needed to, but he cut the safety net. You know, he tore the scaffolding down off the building and said, I'm going to do this without any safety net. And that's what ends up having to do when you're building the life and the business that you want to live. Now, here's the thing. Sometimes we have to pivot. I told you we only have one plan, right? Plan A. And that's the truth. But every single morning we get up to build the business that we want to live, that we want to do, there's going to be things that we have to change. And you know, the plan is, what's the plan? We'll say a successful business, right? But every single morning you get up, you're going to try something. And that's the beauty of building businesses. It's like, do you guys remember that video game Lemmings? Anybody know that one? No, that's all right. Maybe I was the only one that played. Basically, they're these little mindless creatures, and they just walk in one direction. And the only thing they do is they walk until they hit a wall. And if they hit a wall, they turn around. And they keep walking until there's a cliff, and they walk off and they die. And the whole idea was to just keep getting them to mindlessly walk back and forth until they fall off. That was the idea, to eliminate them all, or to save them, depending. So the thing is, don't be a lemming. That's what I'm getting at. So here's the thing. We set a plan A, we have no plan B, but that doesn't mean we don't change our mind. It doesn't mean that we don't throw things at a wall and see what sticks. And that's what we did with our business. You know, if we'd have stayed with what we started with, you know, I knew we wanted a six-figure business that would support Becky, Charlotte, Alice, and our 10 chihuahuas. I knew we wanted that. He's laughing. So yeah, no, we didn't have 10 at the time, thank God. Anyway, but I knew we wanted that business. And early on, that business looked like me going out with headphones in and using a pooper scooper to pick up other people's dog's poop. And I liked it at the time. It started the business. But if I'd have stayed there, we'd have never been successful. Because I'd have realized, you know, I don't mind making $80 to clean up dog shit. It's okay. But there's other things that I can do that are going to pay me a little bit better. So then I started getting into property management. And then I realized, oh, hey, this is really cool. You know, for us, it's like about $100 a month to just look after a place. A lot of months, there's no work whatsoever. So then I started picking up more and more properties to look after. Then we bought a couple of our own. But if I'd have had my way when we first started, I'd still be out there, you know, beating through the ice and snow as it melts, like an archaeologist kind of excavating dinosaur bones as the different layers of dog poop melt out of the snow. You know, that's what I would have been doing. But the thing is, you hit a wall and you're like, okay, this is working, but it's not working good enough. What do I need to change? So then you just move a little bit. My buddy Joel, he's a perfect example of that. He's the one with all the awesome dogs over there. I was going to tell you about the time he was on my podcast, and I asked him about, if you see a boulder in the road, how do you get motivated to get by it? He says, I don't worry about motivation. He says, I just start working, and the motivation finds me. That's great, but if you guys watch him on Instagram, they almost didn't make it here. They have had absolutely everything under the sun happen to them. The trailer has blown tires. They've been moving their entire facility lately from Florida to Ohio. And just yesterday, he had to get a skid steer to lift that trailer out of the mud in order to be here. Not something simple. A lot of people just be like, screw it, I ain't coming. But he was committed, and he figured out a way, and he made it. That's about pivoting, right? And that's what ends up happening with these businesses and the things you want to build. And that could be, you know, whether it's just something simple as, I want to raise bees. I don't know if Bee Man Jay's here or not, but some people wake up after the winter and all your bees are dead. Well, What do I do? Right, or they just take off. So you give up, or do you keep going? Get more bees, exactly. Simple as that. That's what pivoting is all about. What's that? Split a hive, do what you can, absolutely. A lot of the big businesses that you think of today, they didn't start out where you thought they would. You guys know Nintendo? Yeah, it started out as a playing card company way back in the day. And they sold vacuums. Can you imagine Nintendo today? Imagine buying a vacuum and, oh, Nintendo, okay. But we don't know them for that, right? They decided to start with a successful business. Somebody had a vision to say, I want to sell vacuums. And it turned out that their version of success, in the end, was selling video games by the boatload, right? How about Suzuki? Anybody know what Suzuki started out as?
Sewing machine
or looms, like looms for weaving. Yeah, I mean, how much different is that than the jet ski you go out and run around on the lake with, right? But that's all about pivoting. You know whoever started that had the goal of building a successful business. But if they'd have stuck with it, well, whenever they decided that it was time to stop looming blankets, they would have went out of business, right? How about Starbucks? It's a little simpler, but they started out selling whole beans and coffee makers, which is great, but then they realized that if they grinded it up, they could sell you a subpar coffee for $7 a cup and make a mint, right? So that's all about pivoting. They're like, hey, we'll sell beans, but instead we'll sell you some weird named coffee and make way too much money for it, right? In Twitter, anybody kind of know about Twitter? They started out as a podcast platform. I'd say they're anything but that today. I don't know what they are right at the moment, but it started out as a podcast platform. Simple as that. And again, if they'd have stayed there, who knows? Maybe they would have been as successful. Maybe they wouldn't have been. Not really sure. I'll tell you guys a story about me pivoting this week. So I've been after, I have a guest that I want, I call him my white whale, you know, my Ahab. I want to get on the show, and it's Mike Rowe. You guys know Mike Rowe? So I make this public all the time, wherever I go. 4 years I've been podcasting. I've been turned down 10, 12 times by his people. They're politely like, we're tired of you, stop. You know, I will get him on my show someday. But another guy I was waiting to get on the show, anybody know Dickie Barrett? Okay, so he was, you're probably too young, but it's okay. So he was the lead singer of the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, which is cool, but that's not why I wanted to have him on my show. He ended up losing his job as an announcer for Jimmy Kimmel and got kicked out of the band he founded because he decided he wanted to exercise his freedom of medical choice. Pete Parada of Offspring did the exact same thing. A bunch of guys got kicked out of their bands. They got together to make a band called The Defiant. The literal name is what started their band. Wherever you stand on any of that, they stood up for their principles and decided they wanted to. So I've been after Dickie to come on the show. I had to, of course, you have to go through an agent and all this, right? So I get an email while I'm in bed at 11:30 at night, and they're like, Dickie wants to come on your show. And just wait, it's nice for a minute, but you know, Dickie wants to come on your show, and he wants to come on tomorrow at noon. So by the time I woke up, I had about 4 hours to do it. I thought, this is great, finally. So I put all my work into it. I send notes out to all my friends, share this on social media. He comes on, he has signal problems for the minute he's on. He's like, shh, shh, I can't hear you, I can't see you. And he's like, 30 seconds in, he's like, we need to reschedule. All this, I've been working for 6 months, and I had the dude I wanted to talk to, and he's like, I can't do it, my internet's bad, his internet was bad, he's like, so he was nice, and we exchanged information, that sort of thing, and we're gonna reschedule. But here's the thing, I've been doing interviews like that live, 100% of the time, and I've realized that I kinda got stuck in my ways with that. I liked doing live interviews, but the problem with that is, it always seems like when I have a really big or exciting guest that I really want to talk to is when they have internet problems on the other end. But there's all these other moving parts. And I couldn't see the forest for the trees. I always did it this way. And so this was my reminder that I needed to pivot a little bit. I've done this for 4 years, and of course, you wouldn't excuse me for saying, I think I'm pretty damn good at it. The problem is that when you start getting decent at something, you get blind to some of your weak spots or your failures, right? So I did. I'm like, I'm just gonna do this live. Why the hell didn't I schedule that to do a pre-recorded, right? So that's what we're gonna do from now on. If I have somebody like that, and some people are gonna be like, you know what? I miss your live interviews. I'm like, you know, so do I. But here's the deal. If you guys want the interviews that I want, and my goal is to continue to build. And I love getting interviews and hearing stories from some of the most interesting people out there. And Dickie was one of those, and I really wanted to talk to him. So I need to do everything in my power to change so that I can hit the end goal. Does that make sense? Yeah, and it sucked. When I closed my laptop, I threw something across the room because I was pissed off, didn't I? Yeah. And I was actually a little bit disappointed or sad. It's been a long time since I've been that. It's stupid, right? But that's my passion. That's what I want to do. It's not stupid because that's what I love doing. And so I decided, simple as that, I'm going to figure out how we're going to fix it. We got to skip ahead a little bit, guys. I've been thinking way too long. Oh, 15? We're good. No, what time is it? Just want to know. 10:15. What time is it now? 10 o'clock. Oh, we're good. All right. Sorry, guys. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to. I want to leave a couple of minutes for questions. So after we pivot and we've decided we're going to embrace the grind 100%, right? Again, that grind wears on you. Again, you get tired. Again, you're like, I don't know if I can do it. One of the things we have to do is create urgency. And that's a buzzword. I kind of hate that term. But the idea behind it is you have built-in urgency when you start building on a plan, right? When you start building a homestead or raising chickens, you're excited. That excitement lights a fire under your ass and says, I'm going to do this. Great. But after 10 or 12 weeks, again, it starts wearing on you, right? So how do we create urgency every single morning? Well, one of the things that I'm not perfect at, and Becky will tell you this, but one of the things is figuring out what the important thing I need to do is, but it isn't urgent. Because I'm going to know that, again, let's use the podcast thing as an example. If I want to reach out to 15 podcasters and say, I want to get you on my show, that's great. How are we going to do this? Some days I wake up and there's an emergency. There's a fire, not really a fire, but a fire that needs to be put out somewhere. So that becomes the urgent thing. The best way you can do it is to put that stuff first every single day. Do it first thing in the morning. That creates the urgency. You get up in the morning or make a list. That's one of my simple things. I got that from my dad. I used to laugh when I was, 15 years old. Dad would always have his list and he would cross things out. That's so lame, Dad. And now I turned into the old man that makes a list too, because that's what creates urgency for me. So you got to figure out if there's something that's really, really important to you, how are you going to create urgency with it? Okay, so Christmas 1995. I wake up in the morning. There's a little package under there. And it is in the shape of a VHS tape. Anybody know what? Yeah, you do? Okay, good. You know what they are? All right, good. I didn't know if you would. So it's okay. I'm this old man. My daughter one day, she hands me the phone. She says, Dad, what is that strange noise? I said, I don't know. What is it? I pick it up and it's a busy signal. She was 15, 16 years old and had never heard a busy signal in her life. So it's funny how quick you're not with it anymore, hey? You're like, I used to know what this was and now the kids think I'm an old man. So anyway, I get a VHS tape under the Christmas tree. So we take it out and I open it up and it's Apollo 13. I'd seen it in the theater earlier and I got it there. And you know what? I open it up, we decide to watch it. I don't know what day it was, sometime over the Christmas break. I've never watched that movie since. So we're talking almost 30 years later. But there's always been a scene in that movie that sticks with me. And that first one is the one that everybody always quotes. Failure's not an option, right? But the one that I really like is the scene where they find out that not only do they not really have a plan to get them back, but they have to cut their power back by 75% and they're running out of oxygen. And they're not running out of oxygen because they can't produce it. They're running out of it because their filters are getting clogged up. And they have, I believe it's three guys they have in the capsule that's in space, and they have some extra filters for the lander. The problem is, in typical government fashion, the filters on the one item are round, and the filters on the other unit are square. So they can't use them. And again, what do we get? We get one of those scenes in the 1960s, early 70s, with a whole bunch of guys with sweaty foreheads, sleeves rolled up, smoking cigarettes. There's no way we can do this. We can't. We're government. We can't put a square peg in a round hole. What are we gonna do, right? They couldn't come up with a solution. So anyway, I'm not sure who it was, but one guy said, hey, we have this perfect replica over here that all the guys did their training in. So they go in there and they strip it of absolutely everything. They put all this junk in a box and they say, here it is. And they walk into the meeting room and all these guys that have been wringing their heads and smoking cigarettes and saying it can't be done, They dump out this pile of garbage that looks like, you guys ever go by a Goodwill? You know the stuff they won't even take for donations, and they put it in a box and they sit it next to the dumpster hoping somebody else will take it? That's what it looks like. They dump it out, it's garbage bags, it's duct tape, it's plastic cards, it's what looks like dryer ductwork. And they say, guys, our solution's in here, we have to find it. Because they know if they don't, those Americans, those men up in space are gonna die. So they have to start sifting through, like at a bin, at a Salvation Army, and find some things. And you know what's cool? I mean, you guys know, this was how many years ago. But they end up finding a solution. They cobble together these laminated index cards. They use duct tape, they use garbage bags, they use dryer ductwork, and they figure out a way. Whew, it's hard to believe that anything even loosely affiliated with the US government could solve that solution, but they did. They put it together, and that little cobbled together mess is still in one of the museums in Washington right now. You can go by there and see something that looks like a five-year-old built it. But these were the greatest minds in NASA who decided we're going to come up with a solution. So how does that, what does that mean for us, right? Well, there's going to come a day, and I promise, every time, you guys are going to say, I'm ready to build the life I want to live. I'm ready to build a homestead. I'm ready to get off the grid. I'm ready to build a Hack My Homestead business. It does not matter what it is. And there's going to come a day when you're going to say, honey, I don't think we're going to make it. I don't know how we're going to make payroll this month, and it's not, we're pretty sure we can't do it. And so somebody's going to come in and they're going to take a big pile of junk that they found out next to a dumpster at Goodwill, and they're going to dump it on your kitchen table, and they're going to say, your payroll's in there, or your off-grid homestead's in there, or your chickens, your cows, your ducks, whatever it is in there. You just got to rifle through and find whatever that solution is. Okay? So, remember the tape measure we started with? Doesn't matter where you're at. You've got 75 years in there, right? To do, I mean, we don't know how much time we have, but everybody looks at that and they say, there's 1 inch, there's 1 inch, there's 1 inch. I've only got 32 inches left, or 10 inches left, whatever it happens to be. But the cool thing about that is, if you look a little bit closer, you've got 16ths and 30 seconds and 64ths. And we're gonna take one of those little inches and we're gonna split it up into 365 pieces. Because you've got every single day to do exactly what you want to do. You've got every single day to rummage through that box and build the life you want to live. So remember, you wake up in the morning and somebody says, memento mori, everybody's got to die. Don't use that as something to get down on. Use that as motivation to say, what am I going to do with that 1/365 of an inch today? How am I going to build the life I want to live? So thank you, guys. We might have time for a couple questions.
You got about 5 minutes.
5 minutes. If anybody has any questions, we can do it, or we can call it a day. I'm good either way. So, hey, are you? Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question. And thank you, by the way. That was amazing.
No, thank you.
So this is something I had to learn along the way, and I would like you to, I guess, kind of touch on this a little bit. I know that there's a lot of people who don't want to take the first step,
sure,
or change their lives because there's people around them who don't support them or believe something differently, you know, the naysayers.
Mm-hmm.
What would you suggest that they do? Like, what steps should they follow to not listen to them, I guess?
Fuck them. Simple as that. But it's true. Absolutely fuck them. Mm-hmm. Because those same people, when you hit it big, when you've got a seven-figure daycare business, are going to be the ones that are coming around holding their hand out saying, I knew you'd succeed all along. Can I have some money? Can I have a job? Whatever it happens to be, right? Because they're going to be the ones that are going to tear you down first. And I promise, it's not easy. I was lucky to have the greatest woman in the world kicking me in the ass every morning saying, get out there and do something. Not everybody has that. So if you can, simple little things. Try to find a community. Now, if you want to build a business and everybody else around you says, don't do it, right? Simple as that. Try to find somebody else who's built a business in your community. Maybe a mentor. It doesn't have to be. But if you can't even find anybody local, people like this. I had a tribe that I didn't even know existed. Well, I knew they existed, but I called them my imaginary internet friends. Because I came to this community through the Survival Podcast probably close to 15 years ago. Probably 8 years ago, I hopped on the Zello channel, which is like a CB channel where we could all talk. That's where I met Nicole, I met Patrick Berman, who made the knife that's under here. I met a bunch of people. And then eventually, I said, hun, we're gonna go meet my imaginary internet friends. And we came down here and we found that. But what they were before we came down and met it and bought land here was they were my encouragement. They were the people that said, hell yeah, you can do this, and don't worry about anybody else. So I know it's not perfect, and I'm sorry for kind of a pat answer, but that's the truth. Remember those words. If I shocked you a little bit, the next time you think about it, just hear that four-letter word in your head.
People say you can't because they don't.
Oh, sure. People say you can't because they don't. That's 100% true. Because the other problem is when you become successful or when you start something, it reminds everyone else of their failures. And that gets really uncomfortable really quick. Because when somebody starts losing weight, everybody else is like, shit, look at that. I got to get rid of that, right? Or when somebody else, right? Because I do a whole other talk on the poverty mindset. And one of the biggest things is you're going to have all these people shitting on you and saying, you can't, you won't, because they don't want to. Because it's a reminder of not so much their own mortality, but a reminder of their own failures. Because they've gotten stuck on the couch, eating Doritos, watching baseball, whatever it happens to be. Simple as that. And people don't like to be reminded of things they're not doing. You're not doing anything wrong, but they still don't like you, and it's not your fault. So, anybody else? Yes, go ahead.
People also try and slow you down. People tell you, oh, you've gone far enough, and like, you know, you've worked so hard. Why keep pushing?
I'll give you a perfect example. The day before I left for the trip, we had our final inspection for the daycare. And we were in, we've spent a lot of money. We've worked really hard. This is our third daycare. And Becky has worked her ass off. And the lady who came down to do the inspection, her exact words were, slow down. You don't want to get too busy too quick. That's when bad things happen. Every time we talked to her, it was always like, well, you really shouldn't try this hard. You know, it was almost like, again, maybe you're reminding them of what they haven't done. But you're right, and it can be as simple as little things, or it can be as simple as people actually trying to sabotage you. And if you find somebody like that, cut them out of your life quick. We've been bad at that at times, but we're trying to get better. And everybody has to learn, right? So maybe one more? Yep. Hey, man. And also, before I forget, if you have more, come over to the booth. I'm down at the end with the cute little girls selling Canadian chocolate bars. But I'll take all day to talk to you. Come by and chat.
So my girlfriend and I are looking for land outside of the Chattanooga area. It's
okay.
More like in the planning phase.
Yeah, man.
And so we think we know some things that are important, but obviously we don't know everything. If you kind of could start from scratch and know what's really important about developing a homestead, what are some key things that we need to be focused on while we're planning for that?
So I would say one of the things, don't be afraid to spend a little bit of money if you can. So this is the same, I talked to Nick Ferguson the other day, and I'm not saying to go out and pay somebody $100,000 to come and look at the land, but it is definitely worth it. I got time for one quick story. So a good relative of mine wanted to buy a vintage car, and he bought it all the way across the country. He bought it sight unseen based on pictures. And I told him, I said, dude, spend $100 to have that sent to a mechanic and have it looked over ahead of time. In other words, have somebody try to look at the little issues that you might run into ahead of time. And he said, no, I'm good. Well, that thing showed up and the frame was rusted through. It was a fight to send it back to get his money back. He made a huge, it all would have been fixed if he'd have spent just a little money or a little bit of time. Finding people like, and I'm not saying that you need, say, a permaculture expert, but if you're getting ready to do it, it certainly wouldn't be a bad idea to team with somebody who's done it for a little while, to find some people in your community. I know Chattanooga's a little bit out, but Kerry Brown, wherever he is, he's in the eastern Tennessee area. Did I get my geography right there? I think I did. Anyway, yep. But honestly, to find somebody, and it doesn't mean, and when I say spend, it could be spend some time. It could be, hey, we'd like to come to your farm, and we'd like to volunteer for just a little bit. We'd like to see how to do the, you know, whatever it is, right? When I wanted to learn how to hang metal, like metal siding, metal roofing, that's what I did. I went and volunteered with a guy for 2 or 3 days. When I was done, I could do it myself. So find people and then invest, whether it's your time or your money, so that, because a little investment up front might seem like a lot at first, but if it saves you $30,000 on a vintage car in a 6 month fight, it's worth it. All right. Thank you guys. If you want to chat some more, come by and we'll talk. So.